from Shroud University. This is Russ Brialde bringing you another podcast on the Shroud of Turin, the greatest mystery in the known world.
You know, my mind is already made up. Don't tell me the facts. This problem exists for not only people, as you've pointed out, who are interested in the Shroud, not interested in the Shroud, but I must tell you that some of the junk that's come out on the Shroud, as well as the good stuff, does produce problems for us with ecclesiastical people who have to make decisions about the conservation problem. Conservation of the Shroud is one of those things like motherhood, the American flag, and apple pie. Everybody's for it, but trying to get people to do something about it, you heard my exchange with Warren, is a different matter. As you're all aware, for the last 5 years or so, I've been on the Cardinal's Conservation Commission. There's a lot of things we've done that are confidential. I'm not free to talk to you about. There's some that I can. I've also written 2 papers on conservation. And I can summarize for you some of the facts, some of the problems, and some of the ways we've dealt with them. How far I want to go in telling you what some of the further problems are, I'm not so sure I want to talk about. The first thing I wrote about when I wrote a long paper about conservation is we had to accept certain facts. The first thing is nothing made out of matter exists forever. Everything has a breakdown time if it's composed of material substances. However, if you know enough about it, you can, you know, institute conservation and preservation methods to increase its lifetime. The second thing that you have to understand is that you cannot conserve an object whose chemical structures you do not know. If you're going to talk about conserving something made out of matter, you have to know what you're conserving. Is it metal? Is it plastic? Is it cloth? What is it? The third thing with respect to the Shroud is you're really trying to conserve 3 things at once. We're not just interested in the conservation of the cloth. We're interested in the conservation of the images on that cloth. If you just conserve the cloth, hey, nobody's going to at least be interested if the images disappear. Secondly, as you've heard the evidence that Gil talked about, we've now done enough of the physics and the chemistry and the supporting experiments. You heard me talk about bringing fall up to speed a bit. That a number of things can very definitely be said. We know that the blood images got on that cloth by that cloth being in contact with a wounded human body, and those wounds are blood-derived materials from exudates from those wounds. Some of you heard he and I arguing this morning just what we know about those exudates. But we know that's there. And furthermore, we even know that those exudates themselves not only contain image proof, but chemical proof and spectroscopic proof that the man whose body put those images on that cloth died a traumatic death. I'm not going to go into all the arguments by which we can support that. But that produces certain problems for us because we want to conserve the color of those blood images, because that's where some of that information resides. The second thing we know is that the body images got on there by a different process, which is non-contact. We know that somehow energy got transferred through space. By definition, physicists call that radiation. People have offered all kinds of mechanisms, but despite that, Dr. Lavoie is right. We do not know the mechanism by how that image got on that wall. There's been a lot of talk recently because we had an exhibition. It's a photograph, it's this, it's contact, it's that. It's the Shroud of Leonardo, it's the Shroud of Demolay. I can't use the language I would use outside a holy setting, but I tell you it's a bunch of crap. There's plenty of published evidence that says those explanations cannot be correct. All right, if we lose what's on there, no one will ever be able to prove what it is and what it isn't. It'll reside in the field of, you know, one. What are the major things that we have to do? We have to understand that some of the things we've done tell us about what some of the major problems are. In that paper, some of you may realize I started out with cosmic rays, went all the way through to terrorism. and talked about the various kinds of ways these kinds of interventions could produce conservation problems. What could you do about them to prevent them? But I also made the point solving one problem might exacerbate another problem. You have to make some choices. And this is where all the problems come in, and getting people, because it's not going to be done by my fiat alone. It's got to be done by committees of people who have to agree what do you want most to preserve, and for what lengths of time, and what kinds of ways. One of the things we've succeeded in doing is finally convincing people it no longer makes sense to roll up the Shroud of Turin, to keep it flat and unrolled. And that's for two reasons. The blood is blood-derived material. It has different mechanical, physical, and chemical properties from the cloth it's adhered to. It is, in the words of these people with painting theories, an applied pigment. It doesn't say how it got on there, but it is an applied pigment. When you change the temperature, the pressure, the humidity, or are mechanically affected, you know, it begins to micro-stress. And stress-strain theory tells us that these things, over a period of time, will accelerate. They're not linear accelerations. What happens is they start with a small crack, and they get worse and worse and worse with time. They're exponential. And so we have some evidence that we're beginning to lose the blood image off that cloth. If you look at older photographs, we look at, you know, the sample tapes, God forbid, and, you know, all sorts of other things, like the boxes it's been kept in, we find blood fragments. Because the blood's coming off, and if you look at the microscopic image, you see it's abraded on the surfaces. We're beginning to lose it. And so if you want your grandchildren to see blood images, you've got to stop rolling it up. I also terrified them by pointing out we had the same problem with the image. It has been established by three different sets of investigators, including myself and John Heller, that the image fibers are brittle, and that's because they've undergone a dehydrative oxidative process. You talk to any housewife that's over-bleached and over-dried out her linen, she'll tell you it's brittle. All right, that's not the mean housewife. I hope none of the ladies here will assume I'm in a male chauvinist pig. My wife says I am, but, you know, at least I have a good sense of humor about it. All right. And in fact, sometimes when we've manipulated these things, they'll actually shatter when handled by a pair of tweezers. This is most annoying when you only got one or two of them on the tape, and you've got to get it off, get it cleaned, and get it 20 miles away to do the spectroscopy. I think Dr. Grundfress is thinking, you're right. That's why I'm so happy about the idea of doing what you suggested. All right. This also means that it's kept flat, and there are some problems with that. That makes it a bigger target for cosmic radiation. Okay? So you've got to give that up. The other thing is you've got to watch about vibrations. So, in fact, it's now kept on a support which has some kind of damping material underneath, against both high and low frequency damping. This has produced all sorts of problems arguing with structural materials, with engineers. This is the way we want it done. Not the way you can do it, but the way we want it, because we want to know when a streetcar goes by outside, whatever those seismic tremors are, their effects on the shroud at a minimum. The next thing is the problem with the image itself. Since we now know it's a dehydrated oxidation process, we recognize something that I pointed out in the paper, which finally got around to terrifying some people. This happens naturally to any kind of linen left in the air at ordinary ambient conditions. And so it's only a matter of time before the background around that image gets the same color the image is. Because one of the peculiar features of that image is it's not a pigment concentration image. This is proof of the fact it's not a painting. It's what's called an aerial density image. Every single discolored fiber that makes those images up at the microscopic level is discolored to the same extent to the wind plus or minus 2 to 3% of absorbance. So you say, how did this make an image at the macroscopic level? It's because the number of them discolored per unit area produces the gradation densities that see we as shading that gives us an image. There are very, very few examples of anybody ever making anything that comes close to that is an artistic rendition technique. And in fact, as John Jackson's image studies have shown, no other rendition technique that he's explored is capable of giving this characteristic. It's also only one fiber deep. It's superficial on the crowns of the cloth, so once you lose it, it's gone. All right. This means that over a period of time, if you don't do something to stop these kinds of processes, then pretty soon the image is going to be a uniform color with the cloth, or the cloth will be a uniform color with the image, and you won't see anything. Well, how can you stop that? First thing you do is to keep it out of the light. Second thing is to maintain a constant temperature, a constant humidity, and a constant pressure. So that says put it in a box where you control all of those. Make sure that you put some kind of bulletproof glass over it to get rid of the terrorists. Make it UV, you know, absorbing and anti-reflection. So you can want it on an exhibition. You cut that down. Fill the chamber up with an inert gas. So I picked argon. It's the biggest inert gas we know that's not radioactive. It's harder to lose helium with micro cranks. Well, we hit a real problem there. And it's because nobody has recognized the fact, something he's pressed, I've pressed, other people have pressed. We need to know what microflora and what microfauna exist on that cloth. Lucanothelia may exist on that cloth, and I'll give you a blunt statement, they do not account for the discrepancies in the carbon-14. They have not deposited the bioplastic, and they have nothing to do with the image. There's been now sufficient chemistry and spectroscopy done that does not agree with those statements. And furthermore, John has shown, and I've also argued, it would violate simple laws of conservation of mass and energy. You know, we had to have converted the whole cloth to this sort of stuff with the efficiency of biochemical processes to get sufficient material to interfere with the carbon date. So it sounds nice, but that's not the solution to the kind of problem talked about. It's far more subtle and far more difficult. We will not end those problems, though, until we know what's there. And of course, I scared everybody pointing out, you better not make it completely anaerobic. Because if there are anaerobic organisms there, they now have no competition. They may go out and really destroy it. So we have a small amount of oxygen in there, just enough that things can't go anaerobic until finally somebody decides to let us properly carry out this experiment. You'd say, well, why won't they let you carry out that experiment? Because they're still suspicious of how badly people bungled the carbon-14. That's number one. They're also suspicious, Father Abbott is right, is the way we allow people to talk about this in the media. There's a lot of mass media nonsense about the shroud. You know this is my point. And it's nice to say we want to be fair and give those people equal time, but, you know, it's also time we started insisting that everybody read what's really there in the peer-reviewed literature and make an attempt to understand it. And I don't care whether it's history, whether it's chemistry, whether it's medicine, or what it is. We have enough problems, but if people don't want to read what has been established under professional, proper academic credentials, we'll never get anywhere. So that's another problem you have to deal with. One of the other things that we've managed to do, however, is to get across the notion that we need to do archiving. This has already gone through at least two fires, maybe three. It went through a really bad one last spring. You know, if we didn't have all this recorded information, nobody would ever be able to figure out anything what this thing looked like. We now have at our disposal absolutely fantastic technology to archive what information is there. And as I point out, it's a big convenience, because once you've done it, not everyone who has an experiment has to have contact with the shroud. You can go look at the archival material. This is the sort of thing you heard us talking about. Is some strange chemical there? Well, we took the information. Let's go back and look, put in the right parameters and see. The other thing you have to do is to recognize you can't fix it once. You have to follow it and see what's happening. Because of the problem of letting people get quote-unquote sampling access, I'll tell you something else they worry about. And any of you who read the Nice Conference know they translated what I said at the end into French. I completely beat up all the so-called pseudo-DNA tests that have been done. There isn't a DNA test that's out there that you can give real scientific credentials to. For the simple reason, as everybody said, it only takes one molecule. As I pointed out, when it only takes one molecule, whose one molecule is it? That cloth has got contaminants up your kazoo on it. It's been touched by many, many people. And these idiots who think you're going to clone Christ from it, that don't realize you need a whole genome. As I pointed out, when you clone it, you may find out you clone one of our investigators or clone the cleaning lady in the church. All right. Getting a proper DNA test is going to require taking a large sample, and people who followed Svante Paabo's work recognize you're going to have to do mitochondrial DNA, not nuclear DNA. That involves technology that we really don't have people prepared and that they're prepared to do. But this has made the ecclesiastical officials accept what's obvious, but back off from certain kinds of things that need to be done before we can advance the conservation of the cloth. And this means it pays attention to us to talk about this seriously, to talk about it in a serious way, to cultivate a serious attitude toward the problems in the shroud, including some of the discrepancies, and to see if we can't design experiments and things that could be done with existing material to help clear up some of the inconsistencies. Because the more we do that, the better chance that sometime they're going to say, we're going to permit you to do some more testing, but only to solve the conservation problems. These people are not the least bit worried about problems about authenticity. And for a valid reason. Their attitude is, if you talk to the people who went to that exhibition, what did you find out? The people who went and looked at it, Mary, did you care what we scientists had to say about it?
Yes, I did.
You did? That's because you sat through too many breakfasts with us sitting and screaming at one another. Most of their attitude is, this is a symbol of my faith. If you don't understand what this is, that's your problem. The unfortunate thing is, there's people I call the anti-zealots that are on the other side. No matter how much scientific information you present them with, and how rationally you present it, and how many experts you get to agree with it, God, we thought you were smart. You know, you used to be one of the cleverest people in the porphyrin field, but if you don't understand that's a painting, you must have had a temporary lapse of intelligence. You know, my mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts. The number of people who are willing to keep an open mind on this whole problem, willing to deal with it from a realistic viewpoint, is a very small number, and we're very fortunate. The reason we're very fortunate is because it includes the present cardinal. I tell you that from my own personal interactions with him. As you've heard Isabel saying, he's going, you know, by Christmas time. And I want you to all know I'm worried because it's a completely different ball game after that. Who the scientific advisors will be, if any, whether the present conservation commission will remain, what people will do with it, is all up in the air. We've done a good job. We've managed to solve a lot of the problems, but we haven't solved all of them. And one of the things to remember is the first paper I did for DARPA, which was theoretical, this business of darkening the background. I showed that the time period of that could be as long as 2,000 years from the theoretical and the experimental data we've taken, but it could be as short as two decades. It's for this reason we finally taken it out of the industrial atmosphere of Tour and have put it in an inert gas. Because the activation energy is that level with a little bit of catalytic action. Anybody knows anything about kinetics? It only takes a few kilocalories to go to great big long half times to very short half times. Unless somebody does something stupid, I can guarantee you that ImageNet bought her safe for at least 10 years. But if you want to have them safe for at least 2,000, there's still more things to do. And that requires something that he's talked about. Somebody finally told me what's on your website. And you heard Darkin's message and a few other people. It's like the Declaration of Independence. You know, what was the famous saying? If we don't hang together, we'll hang separately. And it's the same way with this. If people who are interested in this cannot get together, and design things so we can go to the real experts who have the equipment to do it right, and the rest of us who are trying to sell some of this are not going to get anywhere. I don't want to tell you how many hours I spent trying to sell getting you over there to do this. That's why I asked more details. The present cardinal is amenable to that, but it's not in his entire decision. He has other ecclesiastics locally he has to answer to. Ask it down at the Vatican, who are the real owners of the cloth. They have something to say about it. Some of you heard my story about meeting the Prince of Savoy. That royal family still feels upset that their father gave away, you know, the cloth at a church. And believe it or not, they have something to say about it locally with the local Turinese population. There are a lot of problems in getting the right stuff said about the Shroud of Turin, promulgated, understood, and it's only if those things happen we'll be able to convince people that it's worth the effort to properly conserve and preserve it. So I've told a lot of people and give me a hard time. I says, don't talk to me, I'm not Christian. It's not my artifact. Of course, then I also tell them when they grumble, how can a Jew be interested? And I say, God, I always thought Christ was Jewish. So, you know, you have a lot of problems out there with misperception, with misinformation. I've read tons of popular articles where data has been conflated and experiments have been mixed up and the wrong conclusions have been drawn. I've seen tons of artists that tell you, I'm pretty critical, you have to say it the right way because it's subject to a misinterpretation. If you don't say it semantically correctly from a scientific viewpoint. Every single one of us has got to learn that and learn to deal with it. Or I can guarantee you, your grandchildren will not be able to see the mystery of the Shroud of Turin. Thank you.
From Shroud University, this is Russ Brialt. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast, and we hope you stop back from time to time and see what else is new. Also, check out Shroud University itself with all kinds of videos, audios, video blogs, and pretty much everything you can think of related to the Shroud of Turin, the greatest mystery in the known world.